Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, travelers, fellow travelers. You found Masonic Effects, the place where we can enjoy some conviviality and some conversation, some music, and engage in the types of things that might not be so convenient or so purposeful in the lodge. Welcome, particularly to our people that are tuning in from Brazil and South Korea and India and the United States and Canada and Russia and France. We're just very pleased to have a bearing or relevance in those areas. And I hope you have enjoyed the program. What if today's in commentary, I think, is quite compelling, if I do say so myself. I want to make and we'll get into that in a few minutes. I want to talk also about what we are. You know, that perennial, that iconic question. If that's the what we are, it leaves us the joy and the pleasure of understanding, of defining through the art of conversation. It is remarkable. Here we've got some interesting tunes. We'll get into all of that. This is a tune from music from 1956. It's Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong. Isn't it a lovely day? Yeah. Wherever you are, I hope so.
The weather is frightening, the thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say that as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. And everything's okay.
Yeah, isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain? You were going on your way, now you've got to remain. Yes, just as you walk going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a day for me, babe. Now I can see the sun up high. They were caught in the zone. I can't see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter. If the skies are gray, baby, long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
Isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain? You were going on your way, now you've got to remain.
A good tone, particularly, I thought, with all of the things going on around us in the world. We're looking at the ripples that are bringing us closer together into some type of global adjustment. Jury's still out on what to call it. Certainly it's out on the experience of the individual as it relates to changes going on around us. We can see very much the same thing about masonry, and that's always the point of the program here, is to speak about that. I'm paraphrasing a comment from Dr. Brittany Hughes, a British historian, that I thought it just struck me. Spoke to the core of masonry when she noticed that she made the observation that human beings are creatures of memories. We're a species of memories. When you think about it, it can distinguish the difference between us and other animal forms. I'm no longer able to say that we're more high-minded or superior in any way, because I don't have any proof of that, other than a supposition from second century, third century. I don't have much to add to that. If that were the case, I would think that we'd be as a race, as a species, would have been able to live in harmony. But perhaps we are the irascible species that, perhaps we are, in fact, territorial and tribal, and that means that, unlike other animals, we have to fight to the death, not just fight to preserve our territory, or not just fight because we're one of the psychotic members of our species. That happens in the animal kingdom. We're a part of that in a lot of ways. The difference, when you think about it, masonry, within the order, we enjoy, we learn a great deal And we benefit a great deal from the observation. And I think the larger question then during that observation is not so much what is masonry, but who am I and what is my purpose? And it's wrapped in this very interesting envelope that we call Freemasonry. The work of it is quite compelling. If you think about how that would shape the order, well, it's so varied. It's as varied as the personalities inside a lodge. There is no one dominant personality. There may be a dominant attitude or bullheaded attitude. Or there may be a very courteous attitude. We would expect more and more of that. But we are great consumers of history, which means in some way, shape, or form, we need to be able to read. I find that remarkable that in some areas, the entrance into masonry is very gradual. So it's by assimilation, isn't it? Where we give the, it's not so much ex cathedra, I think. I think the work of it is to give the interested party an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what aspects of our lives and of our personalities are enhanced and noticed and encouraged in masonry. If we're students of the ancient Greeks, Greek medicine, we would be encouraging the health of mind, body, and spirit. We don't see that. It's a great shyness in the fraternal order. But we have still have this lingering question that compels us to answer. And we can certainly just shrug our shoulders and accept the answer that the smart guy in the lodge has come up with, or something that he read. That's not to say that we have to be pursuing this actively all the time. It is the opportunity. It seems to be the intelligent opportunity, but it's not necessarily compelling. The work is we can learn from history and learn from the works of and the deeds and behavior of men that have gone before us. And much more, I think, than just being a startling, self-fulfilled individual, or certainly more interesting than somebody that competes for experience. You know, I'm one of those fellows that's driven a bit to distraction by somebody, a grown man actually thinking that somebody gives a crap about what he's had for breakfast or where he's having lunch. I just, Anyway, you have an idea where the kind of person that I am. But that aside, we have to be a little bit open-minded, unless we're simply into self-loathing, where we're looking for validation of something, you know, in the darkness of our core. And I suspect, you know, we're no more immune to those kind of processes than any other group of human beings. However, we have this emphasis on fraternity, and that gives us an opportunity to mature. Oh, we can get a serious case of the giggles and boyishness and want to fill in, you know, join in and be part, be accepted. Depends on what the level of acceptance is. If it's the locker room kind of entrance point, it's kind of self-defeating. But we also have an opportunity for the boys to grow into men, and to be able to understand what effect the reasons of develop a motive, if you need one, and realize that over time, as we mature, our values and our sense of who we are as people begins to change. And that's altogether very, very important. We evolve. Those points, I want you to think for a second that in that sense, being a species of memories. It brings up the notion of human beings through time that I see as points of light, like streaks of light, like lasers. And each billions and billions of people are going out in different directions. So it's this great wonder of light. And if we had an aspect on this, we would be able to see that pathway of light that is me or you or that other fellow, and be able to, and imagine for a second that we're able to look at those bands of light in terms of snapshots and see at certain points of time what was going on in that person's life. Now, we can only imagine that type of thing. But what we're able to do is realize that there's a tremendous benefit from the comments and ideas and notions of other people. So some of them will be quite loudish and ham-fisted and insensitive. Yes, that's just the way life is so far. We haven't necessarily reached that point of enlightenment where we can just degenerate, except in Masonry. The enlightenment is that there is an expected level of deportment and a level of engagement. When we find somebody, you know, those knuckle draggers that are stumbling forward aggressively, it's striking. They pop up out of the vapors and look a bit ridiculous, because it's like, you know, having a temper tantrum or a fit when you're in an art gallery. Like, really? Really? Just go somewhere else, go out in that field and do that, you know. Come to terms with your own mind. Points of light. I think that not only are we creatures of memory, but there is this fringe group who embraces that notion and has embraced that notion for a long, long time, great long time. What compels this group is ideas. And change comes not as purposeful, but as a reflection, an acknowledgement that an awareness, a simple observation. If we sit under a tree for an entire year, we will experience the different seasons of that tree. And if we sit under that tree for a great long time, we will see it grow and flourish and then wither. We will see the exchange. We will see progress. And we will be able to examine our own motives. Do we feel a sadness when we see that happening? Or do we see it as the celebration, truly the celebration of a life well lived and moving forward into that next, even though we don't may not be able to tell what that next phase is, moving on purposefully as all men and people, all human beings, have done for all time. It's not a matter of whether we escape. It's a matter of our turn. We all take our turn. So when we want the enriched mind to realize that in those concluding stages of life, and memory is critically and vitally important, and how we see ourselves. If our tendency is to be very harsh and self-critical, we need to be able to set that aside with some balance, teetering on that fulcrum. The balance here is the deeds that we are and the knowledge that we are a person who has embraced knowledge, has embraced our obligations, has embraced an aspect of a truth. Today, more than ever, we're seeing imbalance, gender imbalance happening around us. I'll talk to you more about that in a little while. Here's something that I think you're going to enjoy. This is from Vilnius in Lithuania. It's the Vilnius Mama Jazz Festival. Dmitry Golovanov. I think you'll like this. This is a jazz piano. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Lithuanian, the oldest language still continuously spoken on the face of the earth, I'm told. That was from a jazz festival in November 2012. I think that puts you boys and girls on the map, by all means. It came across a quote from an odd, I found it an odd source the other day, by Alfred the Great. It's odd. I didn't know a whole, in passing, know a little bit about Alfred the Great. There's folk tales about this person. This is King Alfred succeeded his brother Ethelred to the throne of Wessex in Danish Mercia. This is around 871 we even have the date, the 23rd of April. Hard to believe, you know, that specific. And we know that he was born in, you know, very early on. He was born to Alfred and his wife, Ethel Switha. He had a child in 1870, the birth of Edmund. And he did battle. The Danes invaded Mercia and expelled King Bigred and replaced him with a Dane. And they also began dividing up Yorkshire for permanent settlement. Not, you know, interesting part of history. Some historians and some writers have referred to him as the perfect king. Can you imagine? Yeah. He was the king of Wessex from 1871 to 1899. And he was responsible for turning back the Danish invasion, the Vikings, yeah, and promoting a revival of education and scholarship and law and administration. And he translated works into Old English. And this is, sometimes he's given credit for being the foundation of English prose even to this day. He translated theological and philosophical works. But some of the things that he said, just as, it's very compelling. I'll give you an example. I desired to live worthily as long as I lived and to leave after my life to the man who should come after me the memory of me in good works. Oh, we're not going to be so childish to say, oh, is that Masonic? It does resonate, doesn't it? 900 years later into an order. It took shape. It said, he seems to me a very foolish man and very wretched, who will not increase his understanding while he is in the world, and ever wish and long to reach that endless life where all shall be made clear. Very often it has come to my mind what men of learning there were formerly throughout, both in religious and secular orders, and how there were happy times then throughout. Remember what punishments befell us in this world when we ourselves did not cherish learning nor transmit it to other men. Here, very compelling. The hated man cannot intercede. The angry man's not fit to plead. Amazing. Hmm? Hughes, the history professor, made the comment about us being creatures of memory, species of memories. But it was more than a coincidence when I came across this quote that, I'll paraphrase it here, that Alfred thought that we can follow, if we're diligent as students, we can see the footprints of the people that have come before us. We can see the footprints of the people, and we can stand in those footprints. But, he adds, can we also follow their track, the direction that those footprints were going in? What were they? Of course. What were the footprints? What they were going from someplace to someplace. And if we understand that, just as we do when our archaeologists are out and about making discoveries, it tells us something. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of something that wasn't so influenced by contemporary values. This is from the original folk and fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm. Jacob and Wilhelm, and they published this first work, Children's and Households Tales, in 1812, and then it was followed by a second volume in 1815, and they had no idea that the stories like Rapunzel and Hansel and Gretel and Cinderella would become the most celebrated in the world. So they just went on. It was a success and a surprise, and they kept publishing. So I want to share with you a very short fairy tale, folk tale, and see what it tells you about the track taken by the people at the time. It doesn't resonate because these Jacob and Wilhelm came up with the idea. It resonates because people could relate to it. This is called How Some Children Played at Slaughtering. There's a message in this. In a city named Franeker, located in East Friesland, that's in northern Netherlands, some young boys and girls between the ages of 5 and 6 happened to be playing with one another. They chose one boy to play a butcher, another boy was to be a cook, and a third boy was to be a pig. Then they selected one girl to be a cook and another girl to be her assistant. The assistant was to catch the blood of the pig in a little bowl so they could make sausages. As agreed, the butcher now fell upon the little boy playing the pig, threw him to the ground, and slit his throat open with a knife, while the assistant cook caught the blood in her little bowl. A councilman was walking nearby and saw this wretched act. He immediately took the butcher boy with him and led him to the house of the mayor, who instantly summoned the entire council. They deliberated about this incident and didn't know what to do with the boy, for they realized that it had all been part of a children's game. One of the councilmen, a wise old man, advised the chief judge to take a beautiful red apple in one hand and a Rhenish gold coin in the other. Then he was to call the boy and stretch out his hand to him. If the boy took the apple, he was to be set free. If he took the gold coin, he was to be killed. The judge took the wise man's advice, and the boy grabbed the apple with a laugh, and thus he was set free without any punishment. There was once a father who slaughtered a pig, and his children saw that. In the afternoon, when they began playing, one child said to the other, "You be the little pig, I'll be the butcher," and then took a shiny knife and slit his little brother's throat. Their mother was upstairs in a room bathing another child, and when she heard the cries of her son, she immediately ran downstairs. Upon seeing what had happened, she took the knife out of her son's throat and was so enraged that she stabbed the heart of the other boy who had been playing the butcher. Then she quickly ran back to the room to tend to her child in the bathtub. But while she was gone, he had drowned in the tub. Now, the woman became so frightened and desperate that she wouldn't allow the neighbors to comfort her and finally hung herself. When her husband came back from the fields and saw everything, he became so despondent that he died soon thereafter. What direction were they moving in? And where were they? What was the source of this? What were the lessons that apply here? If we left this with children, it would be almost irresponsible in a way. If we left this with somebody that was completely innocent, that's really, I think, what we're looking at here is the results of innocence can be quite unexpected and quite dire and quite permanent and quite unwanted. But there are many other ways of these reading into these two passages. What the story is, what is the ethic that we see? I'm thinking, ponder that, if you will. I'm thinking that when we walk into a lodge, we are walking into memories. Some people can go in and out of lodge every day. You know those, all through their entire life. You know those lodges where grandson followed grandfather and son followed father and on and on and on. And brothers and, you know, those lodges where there's this sense of familiarity almost is obvious and can be off-putting for people coming in new. It's particularly when the graces are still kept under wraps. It's particularly when those men do not realize how standoffish the whole scene can be. There's a sense of propriety, and, you know, rightfully so. For a newcomer, these are people that have been there for a great long time. What about the sense of entitlements? Well, and what about balancing that off with our obligations to one another? It's interesting that some lodges come and some lodges go, and this is the evolution. And these are things that may be contributing to that entire process. Gradual learning is important. Gradual exposure. In some parts of the world, this is done as that process of indoctrination, in a way, is moved forward, where a person, a candidate, is able to learn as about the order, and his entire learning, his entire progress is predicated on the demonstration of his learning. In other words, that it's not enough to read the book, but to show that it's understood, one needs to be able to realize that there are different interpretations, that one interpretation would be odd, wouldn't it? It's in the eye of the beholder, perhaps, more than anything else. And what do we get? And what does that do for us if that's all that's where the learning stops? The advantage, when you think a bit, the fraternity is that opportunity for discussion back and forth. What are the characteristics of the wise mentor? The ability to listen and the grace of silence. Here, Alfred the Great. For in prosperity, a man is often puffed up with pride, whereas tribulations chasten and humble him through suffering and sorrow. In the midst of prosperity, the mind is elated, and in prosperity, a man forgets himself. In hardship, he is forced to reflect on himself, even though he be unwilling. In prosperity, a man often destroys the good he has done. Amidst difficulties, he often repairs what he long since did in the way of wickedness. Interesting. I think Alfred would be somebody of interest to us. The saddest thing about any man is that he be ignorant. And the most exciting thing is that he knows. What shall I be at 50? What should nature keep me alive if I find the world so bitter when I am but 25? Well said, well said. Little West Montgomery. This is around midnight, of course. Thank you. People that are dedicated to musicians have a way of speaking to us, have a way of speaking to us through the ages. Here, let's add to the conversation today. Let's add to the program today. What if incentive is more than praise, is more than intent? In the part of the world where some live, the pursuit of knowledge, the progress of science and thought has reminded me of parallels, like the architecture of analysis. So, can we better understand the way we make decisions if we think of ideas as atoms and ideas as molecules? Ideas as molecules are dynamic, more space than mass. Take a moment to see in your mind's eye how different groups of atoms form into molecules. Change one atom changes the molecular performance and its relationship to other molecules, like understanding ethics and principles, adding one or more ethic molecule changes the energy. And doing this may enable us to understand the architecture of the mind as masons searching for that ubiquitous light of knowledge. It also lets us examine the distinction between each atom, each idea. Let me make a clumsy attempt to understand free thought. In the wider orbit of thought, we are today expressing the effects of the Enlightenment, that period of thought when superstition was replaced by reason and nature. Influence and manipulation of public attitude have become a commodity, one that has a strong magnetic field within, with a consciously and surreptitiously. Publishing is now a cottage industry. You do that at your desktop or your kitchen table. Invention coming from so many points. We have the science labs in the garage, in the backyards, in the classroom, and in the research facilities still. But within the order that exists, neither secret nor public, apolitical yet influential, benign yet purposeful, purporting good but treated with suspicion, known but unknown. We do not feast on a common ideology. Held together in abstract commonness, divided by strength and ability, this agent of conscience, masonry, is an opportunity. Whether a person takes advantage depends on a mindset. William Wordsworth sorted this beautifully in the seventh line of his poem, Rainbow. Child is the father of man. If we can accept that premise, then we can accept how difficult it is for some to grasp. Oh, you think? Doesn't come easy, does it? Never does. Never.
Many longtemps, mais oui, madame, c'est là que j'ai laissé mon cœur, c'est là que je viens retrouver mon âme, toute ma flamme, tout mon bonheur, oh, quand je revois ma petite église, les mariages, allégément, je vois encore ma belle-mère. Elle me raconte comme autrefois de jolis contes. Toujours passé de vous revoir un rendez-vous. Une musique, mes yeux rêveurs. Tout un roman, tout un roman d'amour poétique et pathétique. Mais ni le montant. Thank you.
So painful to take. Thank you, Masonic Effects. nice tune. The clamor goes on, doesn't it? And that's great fun. If we wanted something with really a simplistic framework around it, we wouldn't be Masons. We wouldn't be Masons because the masonry requires a degree of intelligence, a degree of commitment, curiosity, imagination at its finest, an imagination to be able to absorb the ideas that we've been moving through over the years, different influences at different times. So interesting challenge for us in the contemporary environment is to begin to think in a way, what are the major influences on masonry at this point? Or is it, it's not so much today or last week. We're not talking about the weather of Freemasonry. We're talking about the climate. The climate of masonry has changed. Oh my goodness, is this self-evident? Yeah. Yeah, it is. However, like any purposeful organization, we need to be able to sort out what is important to preserve. And so we have this library of information. It's just not one source, not one mentor, one point of view that gives us some hints about what's important to preserve. We're evolving. We have always evolved in a way, and yet we have always remained consistent. So it's not, our evolution has not been chaos. It has not. We try some things, some ideas we develop, others wither. Give you a bit of a sample. This is something that I picked up back a few years ago at the Grand Lodge of Scotland. And this is about the first Freemasons. I don't have so much invested in who was first. I suppose if I was in a race, I would be. Who was first, I think, who expressed the ideas? I don't know whether the person that expressed the idea, I don't know if Alfred the Great had scribes around him that were brilliant and were chatting with him about some of the sayings that are now ascribed to him. I want to think that he's still, you know, the person that came up with them all, but he's credited with it after 1,000 years. I'm okay with that. If you challenged me and said, oh, well, he plagiarized that. Well, man, we'd have to look at the whole rule book on plagiarism. Wasn't such a big deal so many centuries ago. In fact, it was convention to come up with something that reflected or echoed or copied the ideas of somebody else. This notion that of originality is a sort of a latter-day phenomena. Yeah. It comes like this, eh? As I dipped into the future, far as human eye could see, pay attention here, Masons, saw the vision of the world and all the wonder that could be, saw the heavens filled with commerce, argosies of magic sails, pilots of the purple twilight dropping down with costly bales, heard the heavens filled with shouting and their rain a ghastly dew from the heavens' airy navies grappling in the central blue. Yeah. He said, just as a segue into the work from Scotland here, science moves, but slowly, slowly creeping on from point to point. And then this is just a reflection of you. The greater the man, the greater the courtesy. The early Scottish lodges of Freemasons, most of which still exist and still possess records dating from the 17th century, are by far the oldest such lodges in the world. It is therefore remarkable that no attempt has been made to study them systematically, though very useful histories of a few lodges exist. This represents an attempt to fill the gap by surveying the history of individual lodges. Much, though, remains obscure, for the lodges were secret institutes and practiced secret rituals. And though a remarkable amount of record material relating to them survives, it is nonetheless fragmentary. Moreover, most lodge members were men of relatively humble social status. That would be me, which makes identifying and tracing them difficult, especially when their names are common ones. Much work remains to be done in using lodge records in conjunction with other local records, but a start has been made. There is much confusion and uncertainty as to the origins of Freemasonry. In the book, The Origins of Masonry, Cambridge, 1988, was sought to demonstrate, in spite of much obscurity, the evidence that something was recognizably modern Freemasonry still emerges in the 17th century in Scotland and then spreads to England through the Anglo-centric assumptions of most Masonic historians has led them to claim the movement is essentially English. The embarrassing Scottish evidence being explained away by ingenious but unconvincing arguments. The evidence and my arguments related to the essentially Scottish origins of the movement are summarized. This is written not by a Freemason, but obviously the book, this research, could not have taken place unless the lodges had given access. So, tell me what track is the author taking? Adding to our knowledge. Now, who's to say that it's one or the other? But the beauty of it is we have evidence of something a little more complicated, a little more than just falling forward, following one path. There are many points of light in Masonry. And the nice part is we're all part of that. It becomes no man to nurse despair, but in the teeth of clenched antagonisms to follow up the worthiest till he die. Oh, thank you for being with us today. It's been just remarkable. And I hope to see you next week. Thanks, Brazil. Thanks, Korea, South Korea. Thanks, India. Spread those acts of random Masonic kindness wherever you might be, Russia and Canada. It's the day is as good as we can make it. And then today, I want you to think that your effort makes us just a little better than yesterday. And our work is to make us just a little better tomorrow than we are today. Yeah. See ya.
Action. dites un truc, vous faites toujours la même chose. J'adore. C'est que dans un dessin animé. Passons, passe mon temps à les regarder penser, leurs pas pressés dans leur corps lésé, faire passer seul les voiles dans les pas, sans se soucier. Justicieuse à la vue, je perçois le jeu de plomb, leur visage comme des masques, le célèbre à la pignon, que faire semblant, j'ai dans l'air du temps. La face passera, la dernière restera. Ça passe, passera, la dernière restera. En effet, et que de fait, le fait est que le fait se reflète à sa capacité de prendre le fait tel qu'il est sans se référer à un système de pensée dans sa tête. Ce temps déjà, c'était l'été hier encore. Ce temps me surprend, semble s'accélérer. Des chiffres de mon âge, amène vers ce noir rêvé. Passe, passe, passera, la dernière restera. Ça passera, la dernière restera. Ça pas de va dire, 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 va dire. Chaque mois, ce jour, dans des cycles différents, c'est marrant, c'est remous. J'anime à travers quand un n'est pas un autre. Je suis inexorablement. Par les temps, je cours à l'équilibre. Chaque jugement sur les gens me donne la direction à suivre. Sur ces choses en moi, à changer, qui m'empêche d'être libre. Des voix se libèrent et s'exposent dans les vitrines du monde en mouvement. Les corps qui dansent en dessous, les femmes se confondent et s'attirent irrésistiblement. Par les temps, je cours à l'expression. Chaque émotion ressentie me donne envie d'exprimer les non-dits pour que justice soit faite dans nos pauvres vies endormies. Ça se passe, ça sera, la dernière restera. Passe, passe, passera, la dernière restera. Passe, 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 passe.
Bye for now.